James Hammond right now of the Insiders of the Kings Beat. And James, guess what we're doing? We are rehashing where things went wrong with the Kings again.
Every time we try to talk about the current situation, we always just find ourselves talking about the last one and how we got here.
This is where we're at. A lot of it stemmed from Zach Lowe talking about how the rest of the league is, you know, just bewildered with what the Kings are doing or not doing. Don't know what's going on. ESPN had an article said that one of the top five worst moves in the last 5 years, was it, Jesse?
They did an article, every team's worst move over the last 5 years. The Kings were ranked fifth out of all the teams, with having Tyrese and Fox on the team and losing them both within 3 years.
And all of it is fair and correct. Like, I'm not disparaging that, but what we're trying to figure out is where did this stuff, where could it have been salvaged? And that's what we're trying to figure out, like, when it started, when was an issue. Now, I have an idea of what a lot of people are saying, which you might say is like, yeah, you make the right move, then, you know, the team's better and winning cures all. Maybe that's the case. But I threw out the situation in a scenario where it could have been accurate. It could be hypothetical. After the first round series loss to the Warriors, Mike Brown looks at this team and says, Sabonis, not it. Like, that is not how we're going to advance. That is where we need to upgrade, and we may need to trade him. And that's his outlook on it. Sabonis finds out that that is what's going on, and he's finished with Mike. I don't rock with that dude no more. At that point, there is a – this is before we talk about, hey, you should have made this trade, all this other stuff. There is a distinct fracture in that team. Do you think that's realistic? That's a possibility? And that could have been salvaged.
Okay, so we're doing a hypothetical here?
Hypothetical or it's real. I mean, it's no secret that Sabonis wasn't feeling Mike Brown. We're trying to figure out when the origins of that took place. And if the origins were at a certain time, could have everything been salvaged?
First of all, I've never heard that there was any sort of issue at that point between the two of those guys. Mm-hmm. After year two, there's certainly okay. So after year one, I will say, like, Sabonis wasn't on board with the 2 hour practices and practicing like every single available day to practicing. And he wasn't the only one. Like, there were plenty of players who were like, what are we doing? You know, we got to the playoffs and we started to run out of gas. And part of that is because, like, look, as players, you didn't come in good enough shape to make it through that season and to continue on. And that's where you build up during the summer and you get ready for another year. But there weren't fractures in everything that was happening after the first year that I know of. And to be honest with you, I think that's the summer where Sabonis renegotiated and extended his contract. So there wasn't an issue going into that season. The next season, again, they started having a tough go. Mike definitely reined in the practices. He cut back on the amount of practice. He cut back on the length of practices in year two, which I thought was totally noticeable. And like, look, that team was, you know, we've talked about it so many times. The second year of this team, they went out and they lost to the five worst teams in the NBA. And they also lost another five games because they couldn't hit free throws at the end of a game. Like, there was enough there where that team could have won 50, could have won 52, 53 games. And I don't think they really took a step back. As much as you just realize that, like, rolling it back and doing the same thing again wasn't going to be good enough. You needed to go out and get the players that you should have got at the first trade deadline. You should have, you know, when they acquired Kessler Edwards in a second round pick, and that was the only thing they did. The second trade deadline, they went out and they got Robin Lopez and waived him, and that's all they did. Like, we kept getting to these moments where you could have improved this team and kept pushing forward. And then, you know, if you're dealing with the same group of guys, the same exact coaching staff, the same exact voices all around, that does get tiresome. And, you know, just by not mixing it up, they probably, you know, allowing things to get stagnant, they hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. And so there's an alleged incident before the start of last season where, where there was a falling out or a confrontation, that we've heard like some murmurs about between, Mike and Sabonis's general party, like his people. Mm. And I'm going to say that like, there's more, I'm not going to get into specifics because some of the specifics are like outlandish and weird. Mm. And so I don't want to dig into that, but, there definitely was like some going into last season, some trepidation between like Sabonis' side and Mike Brown's side, but nothing that couldn't be like worked through that I could tell. The problem was that, you know, there were players on that team that went to management and wanted to go in a different direction before the start of last season. And I don't think that, you know, like, again, Mike practices people hard. He works you hard. But Sabonis is a warrior and he goes out there and he plays every minute that he can. And I don't know. There are definitely ways in which this thing went sideways, but I don't think that there was some moment after, you know, the loss, a game seven loss to a team that was coming off a championship in the Golden State Warriors. I don't think that there was some massive falling out.
The only reason,
if anything, go ahead.
No, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, there was like a falling out over a couple of years where, you know, certain players didn't want to practice that much. Not that they don't want to practice. They don't want to practice as much as Mike wanted to practice and as long as Mike wanted to practice. I mean, again, Malik Monk was extremely vocal about it all the time. And you know, again, for media members, I said it during that the first season, the first Beam Team season. I've covered this team forever, and I've never had to go to so many practices. Like, that's all we did was go to practice every single day. Yeah. And there was, you know, anytime you have practice, by league rules, you're supposed to have media availability. Mm. And so they end up talking to us every day, and then they get sick of us because they don't want to talk to us anymore and get asked the same questions every single day. But certainly as we get to the next season and then we get to this last season, there was enough, you know, meat on the bones going into last season where we knew that there were certain players that would have liked to have gone in a different direction than Mike. And instead, Mike got a 2-year contract extension and a pay raise. Mm-hmm. And then he got paid out on that. So, I wish the cooler heads would have prevailed, but also, you know, like, I kind of wish that there weren't ultimatums by everybody by different groups of people around the team. Like, there weren't ultimatums by team people looking to maybe switch the head coach, or there weren't ultimatums by people who clearly wanted Mike Brown to be the head coach and told the team they wouldn't play for another head coach. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there became certainly fractures. But again, I think a lot of this, it came down to complacency. It came down to the fact that no one mixed anything up, that you're literally with the same 10 or 12 guys for, you know, 2.5 years, 3 years before things really started to unwind. Just kind of a weird way. Like, to be honest, it was very immature of a group to have that kind of take that early. It's one thing if a guy can't get you over the hump and get you to win a championship or something. But Mike Brown's a hell of a coach. I mean, he is. He was a very good coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was part of, what, 5 championships? No, not 5. 3 championships with the Golden State Warriors. Like, he's a very, very good coach. He came in with a 613 win percentage and left with, like, a 600 win percentage. And now he's running a team that very well could be the favorite to represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. Mm. So I just think it's weird that we get to a point where a team just kind of splintered so quickly. But, you know, that happens sometimes. And it also happens when that's kind of what some of those players were trained to do. You know, when you sit there and you switch coaches every 2 years, or you switch coaches every year, or you go through a year where you have 2 coaches or 3 coaches, you're kind of trained to like be like, okay, what's next? And that's not a good way to sort of handle your business.
Man, a lot of different things there, man. A lot of good stuff, James. A lot of different things. Number one, one of the reasons why I equate potentially right after game seven as in sometime during that summer or something like that to a possible splintering with him and Sabonis is we're just going through the timeline. And I know you remember this. I think you were there. I know you were on the air, but I think you were there. It was like 4-5 games into this season. They got beat up by Houston, and Sabonis got pissed off at one of the media things. It came out that Sabonis was pissed off. Like, we had all this stuff that we ran last year that worked, and we're not doing none of it anymore. I don't know why we're not doing this. And he was a little grouchy and all this other stuff. I think that might have been around the same time he snapped at Jake Gaden at one of the practices. And my thought was, all right, if he's got, and then you hear things later on about him having an issue with Mike Brown. It seems a little 0 to 100-ish. Like, we're only 4 or 5 games into the season. So all of a sudden you're that upset or you're that frustrated 5 games into the season after everything was all good. Like, we're all good and we're friends. We're working together. You know, we got great camaraderie and everything. And then 5 games into the season, you're upset. You're frustrated. You're that frustrated. That's why I said it feels like maybe it was something even before that moment that had things brewing. That's the only reason why I bring up that summer.
No, I'm with you. I mean, like, look, things went wrong here all over the place. That's for sure. I'll tell you this, like, watching opening night last year and what they lost in Minnesota by 2, like, Vivek was not happy. At that point, like, Vivek sat in his seat at half court while the arena emptied out and had his hands in his head in his hands, and his daughter was sitting there consoling him after game one. And it's like, man, I get expectations. I do. But you have to also like be patient and realistic and all that stuff. Like, I think so many people wanted so much so quickly. And what they didn't do is, you know, like the necessary tweaks. And I know we get to certain points in this story where, you know, it gets out that, you know, Mike Brown didn't want a player like John Collins or that, you know, somebody didn't want Brandon Ingram. Like we've seen those points where it's like, hey, you know, why didn't this happen or why didn't this happen? But at the same time, Mike Brown has never been someone who would say, hey, I don't want John Collins, and if you trade for him, I'm going to quit, or I'm just not going to play him. That's not what we're talking about. We're saying there's general conversation where they said, hey, what do you think about this player? What do you think about that player? And as a coach who's been in the league, who has ties all around the league, who knows half of the coaches in the league, you know, you should go to your head coach and say, hey, what do you think about this player and how do you think he'd fit? Mm-hmm. And that coach is going to have in his head or by making 3 phone calls, like a little dossier in his head about a specific player. And it's okay for a coach to say, hey, I've done my research and that's not the type of player that I'm really hoping that we add. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Coaches do it all the time. We just don't always hear about it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to say 2 things. Number one, that's not the only time that happened. And number two, like, why are we finding that out? Why are we finding that out? And it's like people trying to put blame after the fact. It's like, look, you had Domantas Sabonis walked into that season not happy. I can guarantee you, because we went to his basketball camp during the season, during the summer, and he was so clear that they had better deal, that they had deals worked out that they just couldn't get done. And yeah, thanks. We're really glad we got the DeMar DeRozan situation taken care of because they'd already missed out on 2 other players. And it was like, whoa, like, what is going on here? And that team wanted to improve. They wanted to take the next step. They wanted to be a championship contender. And when they clearly realized that that's not the direction that this franchise was going, whether it was De'Aaron Fox or it's Domantas Sabonis or it's other players that were in that locker room, that's when you start to see fractures, and that's when you start to see things fall apart very quickly, and sort of a disconnect between what should be an ultimate goal of everybody pulling the right way and trying to get to the championship or trying to get to Western Conference Finals or trying to better yourself in the playoffs, to like, hey, like, this is just a mess. And like, I don't think I want to be a part of this anymore. And, you know, Wheezy brings up here in the chat, Kings almost making a deal. You know how much pressure that puts on players when your name is mentioned on day one that you're going to get traded at any time, and then you don't get traded, and then you don't get traded for another season, and then all of a sudden you do get traded. And like, it's just like, there's so much pressure that goes on. And like, the instability, the stress that these guys are under, like, to be honest with you, they didn't deal with it well.
Yeah. I look at the situation, and I don't know if we'll agree on this one at all, but the factions and the ultimatums that were given from multiple different camps, you know, the opinions, the ego to a certain degree from multiple different camps. And I know what a lot of people like to believe, and I'm not trying to go against the reporting, or because people, you know, maybe know more than what I do in these situations. But the thought process that Vivek is too involved and needs to let the basketball people do basketball things, I think in this situation, he was too lax. I think this situation, talking about from I don't know a time period, but let's just say the middle of Beam Team 2 year, the second year, there needed to be somebody in there to show some leadership and calm everything down. Because to me, it was clear multiple people were not on the same page, whether it was Monty in the front office and Mike Brown and some of those players, De'Aaron Fox in the front office, De'Aaron Fox. It was all over the place. It was all encompassing. And they needed some leadership there to say, hey, Monty, you got an idea of how you want this team, this roster to be. Mike Brown, you have an idea of it. Maybe it doesn't always see eye to eye, but you guys better figure it out. Whatever players are here, figure it out. Period. De'Aaron Fox, you're talking about you don't want to play for a different coach, or Domantas Sabonis or Malik Monk. You got a problem with practice and all this other stuff. Figure it out. Because the way that we're playing right now, the record, the cohesion, it's not good enough. And just sitting back there, this is how I feel it went down. This is just my personal opinion. It's just like, oh, well, you know, Mike and Monty, they don't see eye to eye. Monty and Wes, you guys deal with it. You've got final say on it. Go ahead. That didn't help nothing out. That didn't help anything out. I think there was a lack of leadership, and this is where I will point the finger at the owner. This is your team. This is your operation. I think he was a little too lax when things were going haywire with all these players, front office, and the coach.
Okay. I mean, it's possible, but I'll just say this. Just because you don't hear his name all the time does not mean that Vivek Ranadive stepped back and took like a lesser role.
So real quick, I'll pause you right there real quick. I'm going to lay out a specific scenario. Last summer, there are players, Sabonis, Monk, and maybe others who don't want Mike Brown. Mike Brown wants an extension. De'Aaron Fox says, I won't play for another coach outside of Mike Brown. Like, somebody said, hey, stop all this. Cut it out. Domantas Sabonis, I'm going to ask you straight up. This is, make a decision, Vivek. Make a decision. Stop listening to everybody. I want Mike Brown to be the coach. Domantas Sabonis, he's going to be the coach. Malik Monk, he's going to be the coach. Do you have a problem with that? If you do, you will leave. I will get you somewhere else. Or Malik Monk, Domantas Sabonis, I understand what you're saying. Mike Brown, you're not going to be the coach anymore. De'Aaron Fox, do you have a problem with that? Do you not want to be here? If not, I will make that move right now. There was a bunch of indecision. Like, they signed him knowing people didn't want him here, and they brought him back knowing one guy said, if you fire him, I'm going to leave. That should have all been handled right there. And we just let it happen, and then we signed him, and we hope for the best. That's what I'm talking about.
I agree with you. Like, there should have been a coming to Jesus moment with this team where they got everybody in the room and like tried to clear the air and tried to get everybody on the same page.
And if they couldn't, people would leave.
Well, and you know what? They may have got guys together and they may have said, yeah, we're in. But they weren't really in, mm-hmm. because that's what we know now. They weren't really in. And that's a problem. And yeah. It's a problem that's going to resonate with this franchise until you do have a group of people who are in, that are all in. And, you know, I think the first year Beam Team won, it was the t-shirt said all in, mm-hmm. right? They signed a contract. Year two, they signed a contract. There were clearly early in season three, there were people that were half in and half out. And Mike talked about it. Mike talked about it openly in front of the media that everybody has to be all in. And if you're not, the thing's going to fall apart. And that's exactly what happened. The thing fell apart. And again, you got to get on the same page. And not only that, but you have to make a definitive statement that Mike Brown is the coach, that Monty McNair is the GM, that you guys, first of all, as GM and coach, you need to get on the same page. And I think for a lot of time, they were on the same page. But again, it's the inactivity. It's the coach asking for, like, not even names, not even putting names on it, just saying, you got to get me someone 6'8". You got to get me someone 6'9" that can play defense. And then, you know, coming back with like guys like Casey Akpala, you know, like the generation before, Mo Harkless, like, go get me the better version of that. And it's really difficult, but here we are like years later, and they're still asking the same questions. You know, Isaac Jones is the only other real player 6'8", 6'9", on this team outside of Keegan Murray. You know, I don't know what Dario Saric has left in the tank. I mean, he played 16 games last year. I don't know what he's got left in the tank, but, and I'm not talking about centers. And even for that matter, Dario Saric at this point in his career is probably a center anyways. So, like, when are you going to address, like, the elephant in the room? And you know, I'll even say, like, last year, one of the other blows that we just ignore because everybody had kind of had their fill of it, and because for 2 or 3 years he was on the trade block, but losing Harrison Barnes, it mattered. Not only did it matter on the court where you went from having a 6'8" guy who could play the three and the four, but it mattered in the locker room. And it mattered in these moments where we're talking about, hey, let's pull everybody together. Cause, and this isn't a slight on DeMar DeRozan at all. But like, DeMar DeRozan walked in the door, and the guy who walks in the door, doesn't matter how many years he's played in the league, he doesn't just instantly walk in the door and start saying, hey, you're all following me right now. All get in line behind me. That's not the way this works. You know, it's you're walking into somebody else's locker room and trying to figure out where you fit. And so I'll add that to the list of reasons why this team this last season, was emotionally fragile, and it played out like from start to finish. Like, you felt it right away, like, oh, this is not it. And you know, but even before that season started, like, what are you doing walking back into the season into a year with Kevin Huerter on the roster? You know, what are you doing walking into the season with players that you don't think are all in, that have shown you that they're struggling or that they no longer fit the bill? And I get it. Like, you might not be able to trade those players, and it's difficult to move on from some of those guys. But at the same time, like, man, you just let this thing, you know, we talk about like low hanging fruit, right? Like, low hanging fruit, you know what it turns into? It turns into fruit that's rotting on the ground.
Oh, like in our Snapchat.
Well, that's what it felt like. It literally felt like just fruit, like rotting on the ground everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, this is it sucks. But like, the inactivity of this group and their inability to move, to take the step from a good team to a really good team to a great team that's competing for a championship. Those little windows were there, and they flat out missed them. They were there. And Pascal Siakam just went to the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years in a row. And that window was there to acquire him. and to go out and make that move. The OG Anunoby move was sitting there. The Cam Johnson move was sitting there. And at some point, you can't just hold on to your draft picks or whatever it is you're holding on to, hoping that, you know, it's going to turn into something great, because in the end it turned into dust. And that's it. It's really tough, but, you know, way too many mistakes were made here. Not just one or two, or it's not just, you know, some splintering that happened. Like, the way that you sometimes impact the splintering is to mix up the roster, is to come back with something different that gives you an opportunity to be better. And I think the one thing I saw from this group was year one and year two, they wanted it so bad to be good, and they never got the support from the outside to take that next step. And we can say, well, you got to be better at this, or you got to improve and all that stuff. There's only so much each of these individual players can do to impact winning. And then you get to a point where it's like, hey, we got to get over the hump. I mean, look at what the Boston Celtics did. They kept losing, right? They couldn't get over the hump. So instead of just going, hey, we're going to go out there with the same exact group and try to get over the hump, they went out and they got Porzingis. They went out and they got Jrue Holiday, and they won a championship. And that's where, like, you just can't think that running it back again and again is going to be something that's impactful. And, like, now Scott Perry, like, he doesn't have much of an option but to run most of this back. You know, I think, like, it's unfortunate, but, like, if you got players that other teams won't trade for, and their contracts they won't trade for, you're kind of stuck. And that's why we keep hearing the idea of 2027, because in the end, you know, that might be their only option, is to let some of these contracts expire and to move on in a way that feels a little more uncomfortable.
James, you said a lot of really great stuff right there, but you said one thing in particular that I want to ask you about, I want to talk to you about. It may be uncomfortable for some Kings fans to hear. It may not be what some Kings fans want to hear. But you said something to me, and I said this. I'll put it to you like this. This thing never had a chance. It never had a chance. I'll tell you what that is. We'll come back with James Hamm here on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
Why you gotta do that to Justin Verlander? Shout out Little Big League.
Justin Verlander, let's go, boy. I knew you had it in you. See, I told you, Jesse. You were down, and I told you he still got it. He's good. Let's go. Shout out JV, man. Got the win today. His first win of the season for the Giants as they beat the Braves. 9-3, I believe it was. And they've won two in a row. What did they say in Major League? Is it two in a row or is it one in a row? Where he goes, you won a game. If you win tomorrow, that's two in a row. If you win the day after that, that's what we call a winning streak. I don't know.
That sounds like Major League. It does.
I've never seen that one, by the way.
We were eight.
You never seen Major League?
No.
You might have to watch that this weekend.
What?
I've never, like, watched it start to finish.
I think you'll like it.
I know all the funny jokes and stuff and one-liners that people say.
I couldn't remember if you said two wins or three wins. I can't remember.
You're going to watch it and you're going to go, wait, this is the Oakland A's story.
Without the turnaround. Before. Without the turnaround of a good team. Good job by you guys today talking to Lawrence Butler. That was a good interview. Lawrence seemed like a good dude, man. So that was dope. That was dope by you guys.
He does. He really seems like a good dude. And to be honest with you, every player that we've had on has been really like smart, like good teammate, good conversation. Like it's been nonstop. But like anytime we've had Rooker, we've had Sears, we've had Soderstrom, we've had Jacob Wilson. Like we've had, like, this is our fifth or sixth A's interview. They've all been great. And, you know, like being a young player on that team right now has to be wild, because you're watching all of a sudden they have two guys that are competing for the AL Rookie of the Year in Jacob Wilson. And now Nick Kurtz is, like, what Kurtz has done is crazy, man. We looked up the stats earlier. He had one home run in his first 23 games. And he's only played in 63 games. So he has 18 home runs in his last 40 games. And he's got something like 43 RBI in his last 40 games. this like that is
hooking.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he flipped the ball over the fence in left field. He just went oppo with the ball that was like a curve on the outside corner the other night. It was just crazy to watch his power.
Well, the two
home
runs that I feel like, I know Tatis hit a bomb that I think they shorted him on some of the distance. But the two home runs I've seen that are the furthest in Sutter Health Park this year, Nick Kurtz hit the walk-off against the Astros, I think it was. That was a bomb to right field. That went almost to the playground area, it felt like. That was a monster shot. And then he hit one a couple weeks later, I think against the Blue Jays, that went like 80% up the batter's eye in center field.
Oh, yeah. That was smoked.
A monster. Like, he's hit two of the furthest home runs I feel like I've seen in that ballpark, man. So, yeah, good for him. Lawrence Butler, I remember we were talking about it a couple weeks ago, and I felt like he had let the circumstances of the Sacramento A's playing in the AAA park, I felt like he had let that affect his gameplay this year. And I think I even said it on the radio, I felt like he was pouting a little bit about the situation. He ended up starting to play really well a little bit after that. But the interview with you guys, I didn't think anything different, but he's a really good guy, man. And I'm sure the situation is tough. But I expect him to play a little bit better as time goes along.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Butler's he finished last season so strong that you almost wonder if he's not more of a second half guy. And if that's the case and he starts rolling here, the A's could make a little bit of noise. But, man, they've got so many young, talented batters, you know, like they can really hit, and they just need to find some more pitching, and they need to improve on defense. And they have to have guys who find their natural positions, because they got a bunch of dudes that, you know, again, Tyler Soderstrom, Lawrence Butler talked about today. The first time he'd ever played left field was at the major league level. That's just crazy. The outfield at all. He'd never played the outfield before. And the first time he does it at the major league level, and watching him and Max Muncy, who's a second baseman, who's playing at third, even he came up through their system as a shortstop, second baseman. All of a sudden he shifts to third. So you have all these mistakes being made between a third baseman and a left fielder that have never played the positions, where they're almost running into each other, or they're letting balls fall in the outfield that just can't let that happen. But it's just because they don't have the familiarity to really figure it all out.
I'm interested to see what they can do next year. I mean, this year seems pretty cooked, but with those guys, the Soderstrom, Wilson, Butler, Kurtz, like you said, those bats, they're going to be cooking. Brent Rooker's still there and everything, so the bats are going to be must-see TV for sure. James, before we went to break, we were talking about the Kings situation, rehashing. You said it earlier, and it was perfect, like this part of the story. Like it's a story that we read, or a show or a movie that we watch all the time. And this part of the story is when we figure out, you know, what move went and went wrong and everything else like that. This is a story, a rerun that we always watch, talking about this Kings team and what happened to the Beam team. But you said something that struck a chord with me. And you talked about how when they lost Harrison Barnes, they lost him on the court, with what he was able to do at a guy 6'8", 6'9", could play the 3 and the 4. And they lost him in that locker room with his leadership and all this other stuff. And DeRozan comes in here and, you know, maybe he has his imprint on the locker room a little too much, or whatever the case may be. And I say, if the culture and the identity of your team in that locker room gets to the point where it's an emotionally fragile situation, like you had said earlier, then you never had the people to begin with. Like, if Sabonis or De'Aaron Fox isn't able to stabilize that locker room and to stabilize that this franchise from being emotionally unstable, there is no Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby that's going to get it done, because they're not franchise players. What that tells me is you need a franchise guy, a franchise pillar. And Sabonis and Fox were never that, because of the slight hint of adversity or things not going their way, they're not going to hold this thing together. That's what it says to me. Tell me if maybe I'm reading too much into it or misinterpreting what you're saying. But I think there's a real possibility that as much as people love the B team, love Sabonis, Fox, oh, we had these guys and we had something going, these guys weren't built to be pillars of a franchise. It doesn't mean they're not good players or can't be vital to a team's success, but you're always going to need better players around them, or a better player at least.
Okay, so here would be my response. Like, first of all, like, a locker room is a delicate balance of a lot of things, right? But like, who's the dynasty that we've been dealing with for the last decade and a half?
The Warriors.
The Warriors. And what happened when Draymond Green decided to punch Jordan Poole in the face?
Went bad. They get to the second round of the playoffs, but it went bad.
The entire thing crumbled, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that season crumbled.
Well, that season. They didn't have, and they still had Steph there, right? Klay still there. Draymond still there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, an NBA locker room is delicate. Like, it can be like a momentary thing where things go south. And just because like things got out of control in one season doesn't mean things were going to get out of control and stay out of control. Like, again, you brought in a new voice and the team started winning. The team started playing well in Doug Christie. Sometimes that's what it is. You need a new voice. You need something that changes the temperature and changes everything, right? And I think Doug has been that voice, and you hope that that carries over, right? Because it's one thing to be a leader of men. It's another thing to carry the job for 82 games for 4 or 5 years or 3 years or 8 years or 10 years. Like that, sometimes that idea of the fresh voice, but also that connector voice, sometimes it runs out of gas and you got to deal with that when it comes. But like, look, I think that they, in my opinion, they just panicked midway through the season. And I don't know if that's because Monty and Wes saw the writing on the wall and figured, oh, if we don't make changes, we're gonna lose this thing. But they went out and they made mistakes, and they made egregious mistakes. And it started in the offseason before they even got to the regular season, when they let like one deal after another slip through their fingers. Then they made what looks more and more like a panic move to sign and trade for DeMar DeRozan. And then on top of that, then they made a series of like small blunders that really hurt them. Like, I've mentioned this so many times, but how much different does that team look if they've got 3 second round picks early in the season and can go out and try to get a Jonas Valanciunas or Jake LaRavia in December versus in February? And that it's just a totally different look. It's a different team. What does that team look like if they have Cam Johnson instead of DeMar DeRozan? And like, it's, I've said this too many times, but it's death by 1,000 paper cuts. Like, they just hurt themselves. And not only that, but the final move to move on from De'Aaron Fox and to take back Zach LaVine is a move that cripples a franchise. And it's why we keep hearing about 2027. Like, this is like a ship with the mast snapped in half, and you got to figure out how to get to, you know, your next port. And that next port is 2027, unless somehow somebody figures out a way to put the thing back together at mid-flight. And so they just really, really hurt themselves by a series of moves that looked, you know, like haphazard and like knee jerk. And so you're hoping that again, Scott Perry, he's got a tall task, man. This isn't easy. And I think everyone's excited about guys like Nick Clifford. Everyone's excited.
Uh-oh. This is a ham freeze, ladies and gentlemen. 3:46 on the dot. We have a ham freeze. I feel like this might be my first solo Ham Freeze. Wow. Wow, this is a moment right here. Shout out to me.
I'm back.
There he is. He's back. It was my first solo Ham Freeze at 346.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, I think everyone's so excited about some of the young players and all that's going on right now, and that's fine. But they have to remember that those young players aren't players that can come in and change the entire direction of a franchise on day one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like almost every move that we've seen this offseason is a player, is an acquisition that doesn't block maybe a younger player from playing. And, you know, it adds depth. We've seen the depth, you know, the Drew Eubanks acquisition, Dario Saric, Doug McDermott. Like, these are acquisitions, even a Dennis Schroeder. They don't block what could be next. And kind of the way that Scott Perry has to, you know, rebuild this thing over the next year or two.
So here's what I'll say, James. We'll wind a little bit back here to your original point of, and what I talked about, at least, about not having the right leaderships, right, not having the right pillars, the franchise players. We talked about that year where Draymond punches Jordan Poole in the face and how you said how things fell apart. That was the same year their leader, their pillar, found a way to stay out of the play-in. He found a way. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying everything going good and you're a great leader then. What do you do when things are disastrous? That year, they found a way to stay out of the play-in. That year, they found a way to beat those other two leaders that we're talking about or that we thought were leaders and franchise players in Sacramento and win in the first round and move on to the second round. That year, there was adversity in that series. They were down 2-0 to that Kings team. They won 4 of the next 5 to win that series. That's because when things get rocky, when Draymond gets suspended, when Draymond punches somebody, when they're down 2-0, they have somebody that will not let the team emotionally fall apart and emotionally be fragile. And that's my point. In their worst moment, they had the leader. And I understand he's just a better player overall. But they had the leadership to not let them completely fall apart the way we've seen the last 2 years with the Sacramento Kings, with Sabonis and Fox supposing to be those guys.
No, I get that. Steph is incredible, right? But that team also won the championship the year before and got bounced in the second round of the playoffs and barely made the playoffs. They had to fight tooth and nail to become the sixth seed in the last like week and a half of the season.
Yeah, and the like, Kings had to fight tooth and nail a couple years ago to avoid the play-in or get into the playoffs, and they couldn't do it. Because the second something goes wrong, they don't have the leadership to navigate through that. And I'm also talking about net leadership. This is what I talked about earlier. From top to bottom, they don't have leadership at the top. That when things get fragile, when things get a little dicey, somebody to come in here and make sure everybody stays on focus on the task at hand. And I don't think they have it at the top. I don't think they have it in the locker room. I don't think they had it in the locker room. Because when everything was perfect in 2022-23, it was good. That's not real leadership to me. Real leadership to me is when things are getting tough, when things are getting a little dicey. How do you handle it? Now, all of a sudden, when things are getting a little dicey, we want to blame the coach for having extra practices. Now, when things are getting a little dicey, we're going to talk about, well, I don't want to play for nobody but this coach because, well, we don't have this. Now, when things are a little dicey, we're going on podcasts and we're talking about, well, we just don't have enough. They never had the true leadership that we're talking about.
Oh, I don't like, I mean, you're probably right. Like, I mean, in all honesty, you have a bunch of quiet guys in that locker room. You always have. And even now, like, who's going to be the leader this year? Like, I don't know. I don't know who that is. I mean, again, like, don't take this as a shot. But, I mean, your main acquisition is a guy who just played for 5 teams in the last 2 years. He's on his 6th team. And to start the 3rd year, like, again, that's, you're not expecting Dennis Schroeder to walk in the door and take control of the team. You know, it's going to have to come from Doug Christie. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to come from some of the players that are in that locker room. And, you know, sometimes it does mean that somebody's got to step up that it isn't comfortable, because I'll tell you, one of the leaders on this team the last 2 years, Trey Lyles, and you let him go in free agency and he's not coming back. At least it doesn't look like right now. Mm. So like, this is tough. You got to figure out, you know, how it is that you self-regulate, how it is that it doesn't look like it did at the end of last season. Cause I gotta be honest, the end of last season, there was no self-regulation. And if there was, it was Trey Lyles, mm-hmm. who was, you know, making an impact by saying, hey, that's not okay. That's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued to see how this thing plays out. And again, I feel bad for a guy like Scott Perry, who's walking into a situation that's like, it's tough. Like there are so many minefields hiding in this place. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, Doug Christie, like this is his opportunity to come back and be the guy for his team. Maybe they're able to catch lightning in a bottle. Maybe they're able, you know, maybe these conversations that Doug has during the offseason or coming into training camp is what matters. But I also know it's going to be very, very difficult that if he doesn't have 100% buy-in from one of his very, very expensive players, sitting those guys is not going to be easy for Doug. You know, if you don't get 100% buy-in from Zach LaVine, from DeMontis Sabonis, from DeMar DeRozan, and you've got to sit one of those guys, can you do it? And that's tough.
Just move on from him. Cause like I said, at this point, I don't look at Zach LaVine as a locker room leader. I do look at DeRozan that way. I think DeRozan actually, like, it's almost like the playing game was a little bit of microcosm of what it is. I don't know if DeMar DeRozan wants to shoot a bunch of times or not, but he looks around. He said, nobody else is doing it, so I'll do it. That may be how he looks at the leadership thing. Nobody else is stepping up in this locker room, so I'll do it. So if they don't have that guy on the roster, everybody need to be fair game. Because the Beam Team year is looking more like an aberration. Like, a lot of people looked at it as like that was the big beginning. That should have been the beginning for a long, sustained time of winning. It looks like more of a fluke and an aberration than anything. Because once again, if you didn't have the pillars and the stability for the people to get you through the tough times, it was never going to last, no matter what the tough time was, whether it's not getting a player, whether it's not liking a coach, whether it's a losing streak. If you don't have the foundation, the true solid foundation, it's not going to make it through any of that stuff. And it didn't.
Well, yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Like, look, we talk about this in the past, like the old biblical verse, you know, build your house on rock. Don't build your house on sand. Hmm. You know, and I do feel like the Kings built their house on sand here. And I didn't feel that way year one, year two. I thought they were building something. But they just didn't take the necessary, you know, steps to make sure that their foundation was secure. And now we're dealing with the repercussions, and more specifically, Scott Perry's dealing with the repercussions. Yeah. So at least you have a guy who, you know, has contacts all over the league that might be able to swing a deal here or there that makes sense to make this roster better. But at the same time, like, you're just walking a tightrope at all times, because the right thing to do at this point probably was to hit the reset button and start over completely and to purge this team. And that's what you're hearing right now from national media all over the place. Like, what are the Kings doing? But that's just not the reality of where this franchise is. You know, again, we talked about this before. You just brought Major League Baseball into Sacramento, and whether that's going great or not, whether the A's are winning or not, you just brought in another product that people are paying money to. Yeah. And, you know, there's only so much money going around, and, you know, I just don't see the Kings doing something crazy like slashing ticket prices and saying, hey, we're going to drop back and we're going to try our best to make this thing work. But we also understand that the product on the court might not be what we hope that it would be. And then the tough thing is that 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you're going to be rebuilding your fan base again.
And that's some place nobody wants to go to. But we appreciate James Hamm pulling up on us like he always does at 3 o'clock. Casey and Friends is going to be back maybe tomorrow, but D'Lo and Casey is always here. And the Insiders are as well. Starts at 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's number one sports station. Vamos, Gigantes.